Hello. This talk is going to be sort of an epidemiological talk, sort of a bird's eye view of a study we just finished, probably a little bit cart before the horse because there's still a lot of definitional debate and things like that. But we had several pilot studies that said we could probably do it, so we wanted to go ahead and do it. This is the research team at the Medical University of South Carolina primarily, and SRBI was our survey research firm. Just a couple of goals. Just want to go quickly over methodology, some of the decision points we made, and then talk about the study and its findings. Two conceptual issues that we had to consider before we started were sort of how we're going to address elder abuse. So the first methodological turning point in the road is, do you just look at abuse by family or caretakers, or do you also include assault, typically stereotypically defined as something by strangers? And the other one is the model you're going to use is based on cognitive status, because that should also determine your methodology. So most existing studies only look at one or the other, abuse or assault, and the problem is that they share common sets of risk factors, and they also probably diverge in terms of preventive interventions. So it's probably a good idea to study both if you can. And our methodology that we piloted with younger adults and adolescents and then two older adult samples sort of did that. And then conceptualizing elder mistreatment in terms of cognitive status. If you use a child abuse model, it might be problematic since most of the elder abuse we know about or talk about for non-cognitively impaired adults is sort of spousal or in nature or adult on adult. The other problem is that the methodology is going to differ. Child abuse methodology a lot of times looks at sentinel reports as opposed to direct interviews of the child, whereas adult interpersonal violence assessment is a direct interview of the index person. We sort of thought it looked more like domestic violence, younger adult interpersonal violence, and child abuse because of the cognitive status of the older adult. They're independent older adults. Typically, the abuse is one independent adult against another independent adult and not a significant power differential like in child abuse. And again, we're talking about non-cognitively impaired older adults. And then you have cognitive development. They're two mature adults. So we realized that if you're going to study cognitively impaired older adults, you probably do want to use more of the child abuse model. But if you're studying interpersonal violence in cognitively unimpaired older adults, then the way we think to go is sort of the model we used on younger adults, which is direct respondent interview. Okay, let me just catch up to myself. Just wanted to give a quick overview on methodology. That's not the core part of the talk, but let you know why we're focusing on cognitively unimpaired community residing older adults. Basically, we use random digit dial methodology to study of almost 6,000 older adults. We use computer-assisted scripts where the same questions are asked of every participant. If they say yes to an item, then it'll go into a further depth on that item. If they say no, it skips out so that the respondent burden, the time it takes to interview people, is much less. We had a very good cooperation rate, as is typical in a lot of older adult studies, of almost 70% of eligible people. And the participants were interviewed in either English or Spanish at their preference. The mistreatment variables we looked at were emotional, physical, sexual, neglectful, and financial mistreatment. And for various reasons, we had to keep neglect or potential neglect toward past year events and financial exploitation by family toward past year events. The others we got since age 60, lifetime, and past year. And then we looked at some risk and protective variables, demographic factors such as age, gender, income, self-rated health status, to look at sort of the idea that people with poor health or increased burdens on, for example, the people in their environment might elicit through no fault of their own, more mistreatment behavior. Perceived social support, which in some of our research with older adults in disaster situations seems to be a very important factor. Use of social services and level of functional impairment. Okay. As I said, there are almost 6,000 people aged 60 and over. We also interviewed almost 1,000 proxies. Now, these are people who either helped care for or lived with an older adult. The reason we did that is we were trying to test a method of determining violence prevalence by proxy and cross-checking that with the respondent interview just to see if it was a valid index. Previous studies have actually had more luck asking the people in their environment of the older adult if they have been abusive toward them than they had with asking the older adult themselves. And this study didn't really work out, but that's an entirely separate talk. It's something we'll have to revisit. Some more women than men, as you would expect at this age, because men don't seem to last as long. And almost two-thirds married. We mapped pretty closely to the demographics of the population with only minimal correction. Okay, and then some of the risk factors we use, just to give you an idea of the context. Older adults are an economically at-risk population. Being on a controlled income with increased costs of living, almost half of our sample were in a household that had less than $35,000 per year, and that's the entire household. We did expect a lot to be retired. Only a fifth were considered themselves in poor health for their age. That's sort of an age base. Do you consider yourself in poor health for your age? Two-thirds had a prior traumatic event. This would be a criterion A, post-traumatic stress disorder, stress, or something really bad. About half thought they had lower social support than they needed. And they were using some community or social services, so there was some need and some access that was happening. That was a little reassuring. And some needed assistance with daily living, about a third. Okay, going right into the variables. This is the area of consternation, is how we define these things. So what we did is we tried to, after a couple of our pilot studies, bridge the literatures of younger adult and adolescent interpersonal mistreatment and extend it to older adults to have a starting point, rather than get in the field consensus, which I think is going on the CDC side. So basically, the way you do this, that we found with the younger adult literature, is you have to have a contextually orienting preface statement, which you follow up by yes or no questions as opposed to open-ended questions, sort of the opposite of a clinical interview. The contextually oriented preface statement gets people away from the stereotypical response set, which is typically recent events that were perpetrated by strangers that you told the police about. That's the default response set. So we want to sort of undo that set by saying we want to know about recent and distant past events, whether or not you reported them, and whether or not you knew the perpetrator. In younger adult populations, you get it 1,100% increased hit rate when you do that. So here's the questions we ask specifically. Has anyone ever verbally attacked, scolded, yelled at you, threatened you to intimidate you, made you feel so humiliated and embarrassed, calling you names, making you feel worthless, repeatedly coercive requests to do something over and over again, or completely refusing and isolating from a person? These would be considered emotionally abusive events. Perhaps not in violation of a law and most statutes, but nonetheless not very nice. Here's what we had in terms of our emotional mistreatment prevalence. The red is past year. So around 5%. Lifetime, it was up to 20%, and you would expect somebody to be mean to you over your life. And then the yellow is, or gold is, since age 60, so that's abuse happening during older adulthood. So, and these are the subtypes: verbal humiliation, harassment, or being ignored. The gender splits were pretty even. There was no significant difference. This is where it starts to get interesting. Who's doing it? Well, the stereotypical abusive stranger doesn't do it that often, and that's consistent with the young adult literature. It's typically people in your environment that you sort of expect would be nice to you, partners, spouses, and acquaintances, children share the load there. Just some characteristics. Some of these numbers may be hard to see. Most is not reported to police, less than 10%. Most is by family member. But the thing that's of interest to us is the perpetrator characteristics. Half are unemployed, a fifth had substance abuse, mental health history, and social isolation. These are areas of potential intervention, and you're going to see this consistently throughout the perpetrator classifications for each mistreatment type. And so we think that addressing some of these things may indirectly address elder abuse. Now, this slide is just very busy. These are all our individual risk factor chi-squares. I put it here. The significant risk factors are here, and the ones that are in red sustain their significance in logistic regressions, meaning they independently contributed to risk. In this case, in contrast to prior research about the older old, the eldest old being at highest risk, and consistent with the recent study by Lallman, lower age was a big risk factor for us. So are younger, older adults more likely to be yelled at or emotionally abused? Being employed, that was unexpected. Basically, some of the stuff is happening in the workplace. We thought that would be a protective factor, but it wasn't. Health dropped out, but experiencing prior traumatic events stayed there. So basically, these people come from a potentially traumatic context. Again, though, half the population has that event, so we can't put too much weight on there. Low social support, remember that one. That was low social support in my psychiatric epidemiological research is a predictor of depression, PTSD, all sorts of bad things. Well, it seems to also be sort of a risk factor for emotional abuse, something that we may want to target. And then needing help with daily living. So there's your risk factors there. Moving on to physical mistreatment. Okay. Here's how we defined it. We sort of set it as a behaviorally specific event. You know, instead of saying somebody physically mistreated you, we actually try and use behavioral terms to lay it out. And then we ask these specific questions. So now again, if you ask yes or no questions and you're on the phone, it sort of increases the safety of the individual, because even if the perpetrator is in their environment, all they hear is a yes or no question. It also makes it easier for the person to answer without having to go into what happened to them. It's less embarrassing, a little bit more anonymous. So these are the three types of physical abuse we asked about. Now, these should actually be illegal on most statutes. And here's what we found. This is much higher than Lallman's study, and I'll put their bar graphs up next to mine in a second. They just completed theirs about a year ago or 2 years ago, I guess. Almost 2% overall, and sort of an even spread, hitting, restraining, and injuring, or assaulting you to be injured. And this is past year. And the gender split was not significantly different. And the perpetrators, again, strangers are not doing this to people. It's the person in their environment. This is mapping on very nicely to the younger adult interpersonal violence literature, but even more so in terms of familial and acquaintance aggression. Most of it is domestic violence, it looks like. So the domestic violence model is going to be very relevant to cognitively intact older adults. Very little is reported to police, more than younger adults, but still not as much as one would hope for physical assault. Now, sexual assault, nobody reports anything to the police, but physical assault, you would hope a little bit more. In younger adults, it's about 50%. In our older adult population, it was only 30%. Again, that's probably because it's the family members doing it. This family member may drive them to work. This family member may be the person keeping them out of a residential care facility. Again, areas of intervention. Substance abuse of the perpetrators. that's a half of the known perpetrators were known to have substance abuse by the victim. Unemployment, we should expect that to get worse. Unfortunately, that's a risk factor for physical assault in this population, so that might have a connection to what we're going to see in a few years. And then social isolation on the part of the perpetrator and mental health history. So again, areas of intervention, that's sort of the positive aspect here. The busy side, okay, here's the, again, everything here was a risk factor in univariate analyses, and then when we considered everything together, the things in red are what came to the, floated to the top. Lower age again, and again, low social support. If a person perceived that they didn't have somebody to talk to, that they couldn't go to somebody when they needed help, somehow this also contributed to increased risk of physical assault, maybe connected by proxy to social isolation, which we know is a risk factor in prior studies. Okay, switching to sexual mistreatment. This one we had tremendous difficulty in our Spanish translations because whereas the pilot testing in English, very few people were offended, very many people were offended in the Spanish version, so we had to work on this a little bit. Again, we set the context very clearly so that it could be somebody you know or didn't know, whether or not you reported it to police, and when it whether it happened recently or in the distant past. And these are the areas. Again, this should be legal on most most states. Forced sex, forced molestation, forced undressing. Okay, these rates are encouragingly low. Again, this is self-report. We're assuming it's valid because that's all we can do. Less than 1% overall past year. The reason we think this is likely valid, though, is the lifetime rates are not as high as younger adults, but they're up there, which means they did disclose the event. It wasn't simply that they were afraid to talk about the event or embarrassed to talk about it. When we then did the follow-up questions regarding time frame, they said this happened when I was younger. So the sensitivity of the method appears to be there. There was a significant difference by gender with sexual assault. As we expected, more women than men. Strangers, again, are not doing it. It's somebody in the person's environment, which means the risk is enduring. And again, there's areas in potential intervention, maybe less so than the others. Social isolation of the perpetrator is a big problem. That one's probably very difficult to address, but substance abuse, unemployment, and mental health history are addressable problems. Their N was too low to do logistic regressions that we could feel good about the sample size in this one. So these are the univariate risk factors. The main one, just we did do the logistics, I just don't want to report them, but social support came up high. Okay, now neglect. I define neglect in two ways, one in which there was an unmet need of living and there was a person who was identified as able to take care of that need but not doing it. But really what I was interested in was potential neglect, or we could call it societal neglect. Here's an older adult that has an unmet need and nobody to help them take care of it. These are the areas. So transportation, food and medicine, helping with cooking and preparing meals, helping with keeping the house clean and safe and the yard clean and safe, helping with getting out of bed, getting showered, and helping to make sure that financial things were taken care of, getting some money to pay the bills. This one was much higher than we thought. These are people admitting that they're having these types of problems. Again, this is potential neglect, meaning they have a problem and there's nobody to help take care of it. The big ones were maintenance of the house and yard, and that was by far the biggest one, just general upkeep of where they live. There was, again, a gender split. Women had more problems with neglect. Low social support, again. And this one did have a demographic setup. being non-white and having low income increased neglect. Now, that's logical. We probably didn't need a big study to do that. The low social support was, again, clearly logical in this mistreatment type. Financial exploitation. This is the measure that I feel least good about because, one, the time frame was very hard to get, and, two, it's a moving target of what's appropriate or not appropriate. You'll have to defer to Ken's stuff on this one because I feel that we did this not as well as the others. Areas, permission, good decisions. Did they tell you about it and give you copies? Forgery in the past, forced to trick you into signing things, stolen money. And then we switched to stranger. That was all familiar. Stranger, spending, stealing, forging, forcing you. Here's what we got. About 5% overall. That's within the past year by a family member. So 5% of the people felt that they were being financially exploited by a family member within the past year. There was no real significant difference between men and women. This one social support didn't come up with. It did in terms of stranger exploitation. Use of social services and ADL. So basically these are people who had some degree of functional impairment. They were exploitable, for example, easier to take advantage of. And then this is the stranger. I'm going to go quickly through this one. This is a lifetime measure, so it's less relevant for older adults. Okay. To summarize, how am I doing on time? 1 minute. To summarize, if you look at any type of elder mistreatment in the past year, any at all, you'd get 15%, not counting stranger financial abuse. Overlaying the most recent study, they did 3 of the 5 that we did. They had much higher rates of verbal abuse, but much lower physical and financial. Their verbal abuse was very liberally defined. I thought ours was, but theirs was really liberally defined. I attribute our 8 times higher rate of physical abuse to our methodology. It's been refined over about 10,000 people in different age groups, and I think we get that right. Here's your risk factor sets. The one in red is social support. So the abuse type is at the top, and then the risk factors are down the side. And you can see some recurring themes, lower age, social support. If you didn't notice, I want you to focus on social support. And here's why. So basically, you have 1 in 10 cognitively intact, community-residing older adults getting one of the typical types of mistreatment, physical, sexual, emotional, or neglectful. When you consider financial, it goes to 1 in 7. And low social support's the big player in the room. Now, what do the perpetrators look like? They have relatively high unemployment, more than twice the national average. They have 3 to 5 times the national average of substance abuse. They're isolated, and they may have untreated mental health problems. These are targets that can be intervened. Neglect, low income, poor health, and low social support. Didn't take a study to get that one. However, that in combination with the idea of the social support as a risk factor across the board tells us that social connection is going to be very important for older adults. Facilitating reconnection to the neighborhood, facilitating transportation, which is probably the single biggest problem with older adults, may actually reduce elder mistreatment. Social support is key. In my disaster research, the most protective factor against developing psychopathology following a disaster in older adults is social support. And this is easy. This can be something as simple as transportation, expanded Meals on Wheels programs, teaching communities to include older adults in most community-based initiatives and things like that. I think my time's up.
Your time is up.
Okay. Thank you.